Thank you for joining us, today's Healthy Community. Today's Healthy Community aims to improve health literacy by offering resources and information that strengthens and supports the wellness of individuals, families, and the communities in which we live. I'm your host, Rebecca Van Ness, and today's topic is clinical studies, what they are, why we should care. And we're grateful to have Pete Fronte, the president and CEO of Altura out of Southern California, join us today. I'll give you a little background on Pete. His CV resume is extensive, so I'll try and keep this brief, Pete, because I'm really excited to talk to you. Pete is the founder and president, CEO of Altura. He spent 22 years being a catalyst for developing innovative processes and technology that accelerates clinical studies, including drugs, biologics, medical devices, and wearables. The efforts included expanding clinical study participation for patients and healthcare providers, and he works on building performance and quality-based research centers in health systems and in community health centers. Mr. Fronte is a leader in expanding the participation of patients and healthcare providers by developing and providing useful technology. They have an amazing application, which he'll share more about as we move forward, called Altura's HCP Studies, a mobile online tool. And we will offer an exclusive opportunity for listeners to access this at the end of the show. So make sure you have your pen and paper ready. Mr. Fronte is a current member of the Institutional Review Board of Ethics and Committee at St. Joseph Health System in Orange County, where he served for over 18 years and feels passionate about helping folks understand clinical studies. He's a national speaker and writer on subjects such as site-based clinical research operations, innovative patient engagement methods, and the integration of clinical research in primary care and organized healthcare delivery systems. So welcome to the show, Pete, and I'm really excited to talk to you about all you have to share. Go ahead.
Well, it's a pleasure. You know, thank you very much. And I'd like to start by congratulating Rebecca, you and the producers and the station on launching the show and obviously having a successful first episode. I think it's going to be a great community resource, not only for people in the community, but hopefully healthcare providers also.
Yeah, I think so.
So a few objectives just for the listeners. I want to describe, demystify what's typically considered clinical research and what that means, but the various studies that are available and how they work, why it's important to be involved and what participants can expect and who's in, basically who does these things and how, and a bit of a call to action, because studies are very important for us to learn not only about new interventions, but how to improve the healthcare delivery system so that we're all healthier and we can remain healthy.
That's our goal.
You bet. And literacy, I listened with interest. Dr. McEnany in the first episode talked about literacy, and I really think clinical studies is part of that. I mean, we all need to educate ourselves about our health, but the options, if I recall, they talked about how healthcare is paid, how to be proactive with healthcare, and one of those elements is the clinical studies or healthcare studies. Since, you know, essentially that's how we help providers, health systems, and manufacturers or innovators come up with the right solutions. And I think what I gained from that segment to tie it all together was that ultimately we, the patients, the people, are in charge of our healthcare team. Studies are another way to educate yourself. And one of the best ways to educate yourself is by participating. And I think being in a study, whether it's a disease management program, an intervention, a new medication, a wearable, will only allow you to have a better understanding of what a study can do to improve your health. And I think the data that comes from it, I think you'll hear the term health outcomes and population health. And those are very critical components to the healthcare delivery system, as many of you have heard. But research is really an important part of it. And I would argue that I think research has been viewed as an ivory tower. It only happens at certain leading academic centers. But I would argue every one of the listeners can participate one form or another. And if your healthcare provider is not aware, and this is an important statistic, less than 3% of healthcare providers in this country are actually involved with clinical research or clinical studies. But most of the public opinion surveys from folks like you and I, you know, patients, people, indicate that they want to hear from their healthcare provider or their or health organization about which studies are available.
Yeah, and I think that's very interesting because you don't know what you don't know, and for a patient to be engaged with their provider as a healthcare team, I think it's very important to offer listeners, the patient, people in the public, the opportunity to gather information, share that with their provider, and together determine what's going to be the best course of action or treatment for them. I know there's lots of different types of studies. I was very intrigued to hear about and understand, as I've learned from you over the past several years, about the different types of studies. Some of them don't involve medications at all. Some of them involve wearables. I know there's a variety from the phase 2 through 4 studies and other types of studies that people might want to know about. Can you talk to us a little bit about that? And I think also maybe touch on the benefits of clinical research studies for those that live in frontier and rural communities. I think may be interesting because it gives them access to things that they might not necessarily know about. And there's even possibly opportunities for remote clinical sites for people to engage that don't live in cities or large near large universities or research institutions where that might take place.
You bet. That's important. And that's a good segue into talking about different types of trials. And I want to share something I saw recently from Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. They're one of the leading cancer centers. And they did a survey of 600 physicians around the country. And one of the findings was that most providers, healthcare providers and physicians, believe that research is a treatment of last resort. And as we talk about, as Rebecca mentioned, the types of studies, it's important to distinguish because I think many of us believe clinical research is one of those things that you do when there's no other options. And indeed, in some therapeutic areas, in some diseases, if you will, that's the case. And there are studies that might help someone that doesn't have any other options. However, those situations are really not the norm. So when we think of studies, there's a few ways to look at it. The investigational studies that are done for the FDA, everything that's prescribed to you today is approved by the FDA for use by the providers, and it's manufactured certain ways to make sure we ensure safety. And those studies are called phase 1 through 3 studies. The threes being the studies that are larger populations that happen later in the process, just before FDA approval, if it happens. And it needs, and this kind of research needs to happen. And when you think of the innovations with insulin, aspirin, antibiotics, the statins for cholesterol, penicillin, vaccines, there are so many things that happen because research occurs, and it's important for us to participate and for research to continue to happen. But those are considered the gold standard randomized study, which means typically you or your study physician don't know what you're getting, and you're randomized to one of many arms. And the reason for that is so that they really understand if this new medication is safe and works so that it can be approved. So those studies might be difficult in rural areas because you need to go to a study site. And the study site may not be close by, or, you know, it may be hours away. A few studies may pay for transportation, but typically there are a certain number of visits that happen over time, so it's better to be close. The next type of study, which is still under the auspices or under the governance of the FDA, are the phase 4. What that means is that medication's on the market. It's approved for something, a disease state, but they're doing more work to explore safety or other populations, and the data is being collected rigorously. And the difference there, it's the medication's not investigational, it's been approved. Once you move from those types of studies, you get into more real-world evidence or real-world studies, and these can be studies that are prospective. All that means is that they collect the information moving forward. You're going to be asked questions, or whether it's online, as Rebecca mentioned, or going maybe to your doctor's office locally about how a medication or device or an intervention might work, or they might be studying it in different populations, ethnic groups, older, younger, in different combinations. And there's interventions also, physical therapy, how that might work in alleviating pain, back pain, how exercise might work in certain conditions, and different types of diets on maybe reducing cholesterol or improving diabetic outcomes, how counseling options might work. These are so important, and they don't require, you know, they don't really involve investigational medications, but it's data and information we need if we're going to become an evidence-based healthcare system where not only you know what works for you, but your healthcare provider has a better feel for how we can individualize care.
That's really great. Thank you for explaining that.
Yeah, and the technology, I'll just touch on other type of intervention. And we all know now with our phones and watches and, you know, everything else out there, wearables, and we all have so much data and information potentially that can be collected, but the wearables type studies can improve care. And I'll give you an example of one of those. We finished a project, or completed recently a project with the Michael J. Fox Foundation for Parkinson's disease. They're very proactive in finding a cure and gaining information from Parkinson's patients. And they had a wearable studies where they actually measured tremor rates and a lot of other activity, including medication use, with hopes of finding matches or information or correlations, if you want to call it that, so that other research could develop solutions to help Parkinson's patients. So that's an example of a type of wearable project that doesn't require you to go in or doesn't require you to take a medication.
Well, that's great. So, Pete, we're going to take a quick break and we'll come back and follow up on the second half of today's Healthy Community.
You bet.
Welcome back to today's Healthy Community. You're joining us today with our guest, Pete Fronte, the president and CEO of Altura out of Southern California. We're talking about clinical studies, what they are, and why you should care. And Pete, I'd like to continue our conversation. You shared about different types of studies, and I think we were going to maybe move into who's conducting these studies and how they're run, and tell us a little bit more about how it all works.
You bet. Yeah, it's important for all of us to know, you know, the types of studies, but also who's involved. So typically studies involve a sponsor. What that just means is that someone is funding the study. You know, it could be a pharmaceutical or a biotech company if it's a new drug. It could be the NIH, which is National Institute of Health, or a medical foundation. I mentioned the Michael J. Fox Foundation. So it could be a health system. That's the sponsor, if you hear that term. The study sites are where the studies take place. Unless, as Rebecca said, there are virtual studies or are online studies, and you're seeing more of that. And that's why I think it's exciting for, you know, each of you to consider an area of passion or interest with your health and try to join, whether it's in person locally or virtually. Now, there are study team members involved, like the study physician. For the FDA-type studies, you're going to hear them referred to as investigators. Not that that should scare you, but that's just more of a regulatory term. And there are study coordinators. These are really dedicated professionals that are looking out for your well-being for the studies and ensuring the privacy and the accuracy of the data and the privacy of your health information. And it's really important to understand your protections because the FDA ultimately oversees the investigational medications, but any study, health study or health research will have what's called an ethics committee or what they call an IRB. That's one of those types of boards, an institutional review board, but it's really an ethics committee that protects patients. That's what we're about, is looking at the study to make sure it's that the people doing it are doing it right, that the protocol minimizes risk, and that the informed consent, and this is important, any study you do should have an informed consent, and that consent should not only be read but understood, and ask questions if you're not sure about what's involved, how many visits, and how your information is being protected and who is getting it. And the studies ultimately should be approved as the consent is by the IRBs. So that's important to understand that there's people that are really out there making sure, I mean, the studies that are done well and correctly, that are being, there's oversight and that the patient's interests are kept in mind.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a protocol, which is basically a plan, And every study will have a plan on how many visits, what you need to collect or give to them, whether it's in person or online. And if it's a study where you have to go in, it could mean, you know, blood samples or x-rays or, you know, other kinds of lab values. So you'll see that in usually in the consent will describe what's involved. And then typically the people doing the research, the sponsor, will submit that data to the FDA, or if it's really not for the FDA, they may publish that information or share it with others for the sake of improving healthcare.
And sharing information is so important today in this changing healthcare landscape. So why should patients be involved, Pete?
Well, yeah, I think it's a great question. I think it's to help, obviously help yourself. And what we've probably touched over a million patients for clinical trials over the years, and many people are seeking either another option or to learn more about their condition. But there's also the need to help others. It may be a condition you have that's hereditary and you want to learn more because you're worried about your kids or your grandkids, or just in general you feel that contributing is going to make a difference for the folks that are trying to find these solutions. So part of helping yourself is also accessing new interventions. It's maybe getting a watch or a wearable or a medication you might not otherwise receive, or maybe a test that you may not otherwise receive. And I like the concept of the literacy and the learning. I can't tell you how many times we've done a diabetes study for patients that are type 2 diabetic, probably should be on insulin or not. I'm really worried about what having insulin means. And they get in the study, they end up getting insulin as part of a study, almost as, well, let's try it. Then they realize, you know, it's not as bad as I thought, and it's making a difference in how my diabetes is controlled. So you can really learn about your condition. And again, not just read about it, but participate. And active participation equals learning. You might be supporting your healthcare provider or your health system, which is important, getting information and giving information and participating in the system, and just guiding innovation and change. There's no need to be on the sidelines. We can make a difference in our disease by contributing, by sharing our opinions, by giving information about how we feel about medications or interventions. So those are some of the reasons why I think it's really important to be involved.
Yeah. And going back to, I know you referenced Dr. McEnany's interview, and I thought that was a great opportunity to speak with her. One of the things that she said that really stuck with me was that healthcare isn't something that happens to a person. Healthcare is something that's received. And in order to receive it, they actually need to accept it and understand it in order to get the most out of it. And I think that this is one of those situations and one of those topics in which patients can really strengthen their relationship with their healthcare provider and their healthcare team to make sure that they have the best outcomes and the best quality of life. Can you give me some examples of maybe some studies that have gone on, maybe some outcomes, things that you found interesting or would like to highlight?
Absolutely. And there is a few resources, not many, and that's part of the problem, not only for people like us, patients in the community, people in the community, but even healthcare providers. I gave that number earlier that only 3% are actively involved, and it's going to be a lot less in the rural communities such as what we're seeing in New Mexico. But clinicaltrials.gov is a website put together by the government that tracks clinical trials. That's a source if you're trying to find studies. I just wanted to share that before I get into some examples. If you have a local hospital, typically those IRBs or ethic committees that I mentioned will understand or know which studies are being done in their community because they have to approve them potentially. And you might hear or see something on the radio or TV. That's how it's traditionally done. There's also a lot of other websites if you have specific conditions, or the pharma biotech companies usually list their clinical trials, and then you have the foundations like Michael J. Fox or the American Diabetes Association, American Heart Association that list clinical trials. So those are a few ways to check on trials, but the type of studies, and I mentioned the medications that have come from these studies, but I'll give you a few examples. There's typically people think of breast cancer studies as chemotherapy or radiation when someone has the cancer or a late-stage cancer. But I want to change the perspective a little bit. We're doing a study right now that's early stage, you know, women that have had successful surgery and now are starting the hormonal therapy, and they're trying to determine how to add medications that will decrease the likelihood of reoccurrence. That's a kind of a different way to look at it, because typically now the cancer is gone and we're in long-term treatment, but let's prevent it from reoccurring. Cluster headache, a devastating headache, that study we completed recently, where these people suffer and there hasn't been many options, and these are clinical trials where we need to find medications to help people, and we know about migraines and there's more resources for that. I mentioned also the diabetes studies and the insulins, and now looking at, for instance, longer acting insulin. So maybe you take it once a week. They've even been experimenting and looking at inhaled insulin as an easier way to comply with insulin therapy. And we've even worked with some fairly qualified health centers like San Diego Family Care that's serving the underinsured, and they're involved with very innovative health center that's involved with clinical trials, and again, your local hospital or academic center might also be involved with those types of investigational trials. And the phase four, the ones that are already approved, the FDA typically wants more safety data, and you're seeing a lot more of those studies seeking long-term information about maybe something like COPD, which is a pulmonary disorder, chronic one, or other types of conditions, again, like type 2 diabetes. But there's a lot of interesting testing going on. I know that we did a colon cancer screening study, and this has now been approved by the FDA, which is non-invasive, meaning you don't have to get a colonoscopy. They used samples, stool samples, to determine and detect cancer. This is important, as well as imaging studies that are happening to provide better imaging, for instance, for breast cancer detection. Watches to detect arrhythmias. We have one of our partners, Desert Oasis Healthcare in Palm Springs, is doing some innovative research on patients' opinions on everything from their satisfaction to why are they using the ER, and is there a way to serve them better besides the emergency department? I mentioned the Michael J. Fox Foundation with the wearable study, but they continue to do online studies. If you or a family member or friend has Parkinson's disease, they really want the patient's voice and experience with Parkinson's disease so they can collect information and enable researchers around the world to try to find a cure. So these are all ways that you can be involved with research, whether it's in person or virtually.
And with that, I think we might share with listeners, you have graciously provided us a great opportunity for our community members and our listeners to find out more about research and maybe peruse information that may be of interest to them. Maybe share with the listeners how we might connect them to more of this information.
Absolutely, because I think that's what it's about. Is if we're demystifying this, is now how do we make it more mainstream? And there's a big move to integrate research health studies with medical care so we can become more evidence-based and have more point-of-care studies, or even studies right there in your home. And we know there's various types of studies. You can join yourself, but you can also let your healthcare providers be aware or ask them about studies. And there's a few ways to do it, and we definitely want to help the community and always are willing to provide our resources as part of the solution. There's a few ways. If you're interested in news about studies that are in the, you know, that are interesting, that have come out recently, or what's happening with FDA approvals, we have something called HCP studies, just like it sounds, two different words, HCP, and then studies, STUDIES. You can go to the Google Play if you have an Android phone, or the App Store for iPhone, and just search. It's a free app, and you can just search HCP studies and download, and you'll have that available to you at no cost. Our website has a patient section if you prefer as another option. And let me just go back. That HCP studies, if your healthcare provider, that could be a pharmacist, that could be a physical therapist, it could be a nurse practitioner, it could be your doctor, anybody that you trust in your healthcare, a nurse that's important to you, can be part of this essentially online community. And you can let them know about that too, and there's no cost for them to download. But the website, our website that you can also go to, the patient section, is www.alturastudies.com, ALTURASTUDIES.com. There's a patient section. In that section, if you'd like, you can put in your name. And if you enter Today's Health in the message section, there's no cost, but you can call us, one of our research advisors, if you have questions about studies or if you're curious about participating or if you want to know if there's a study in their area, we would be happy to provide that service as part of the Today's Healthy Community resources.
Okay. Well, that sounds great. I'm going to encourage people to visit us on our Facebook page, Today's Healthy Community, and you can send us questions. You can send us topics you're interested in. And I wanted to thank our listeners for joining us. Please join us next week for Today's Healthy Community every Friday at 12 o'clock. I want to thank KURU, of course, and our producer, Justin Blanton. And until next time, everybody stay healthy.